Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for tuning in for another episode of Northern Transmissions. This week, my guest was Matthew from the band Symbols Eat Guitars. If you want to know a bit more about the band Symbols Eat Guitars, you can check out their website, symbolseatsguitars.com, or they have a MySpace page as well. You can get their tour dates there and check out some free downloads. So let's check out the track Plain Clothes off the 2011 release Lenses Alien on Barsook Records.
There was a man who killed a state trooper, drove his pickup truck to Belmar and slept in a beach house. A dream of the day when two protons collide, everything changes. We're dry, with footplates on
off the top. I talked with Matthew about the band signing to Barsook Records, as well as working with legendary producer engineer John Agnello.
You know, when it came down to deciding which label to sort of settle down with, you know, it really just came down to you know, the people that we would actually be collaborating with day to day or almost day to day, and so Barsuk was definitely the best fit in that regard. But you know, it didn't hurt that they were. I think there's something like they're the only indie label, they're the only American indie label that has a gold record, I think, from the Postal Service. And that they've been successful with bands like Death Cab, that definitely factored into it as well.
Right. They really have a knack of working with young bands, and really it seems they really know how to help them and pardon them, nurture them along the way. Have you found you've had a great lot of support from them so far?
Yeah, totally. You know, they definitely seem to invest in bands that they sign in a very long-term way. And that's what we were looking for, you know, someplace where we could sort of orchestrate a slow build and just sort of be in it for the long haul. And creatively, they've given us complete freedom as well, which has been amazing. You know, they basically didn't hear the record until we delivered it to them. We definitely talked to a few labels that were more interested in just being more hands-on in shaping, you know, our band and our sound, and you know, wanting us to submit demos along the way. And I guess labels that wanted to have more of an A&R role. Which is fine. There's something to be said for that. But you know, I guess at this point in our career as a band, it just wasn't the right thing for us.
Right. And I mean, you guys have worked with two really pretty successful producers so far, John Angelo, of course, and Kyle Johnson. Were there major differences in the recording process?
I can't really speak to what the recording process was like with Kyle for Why There Are Mountains, because I wasn't in the band at that point. But I do know that that particular record was much more studio intensive in terms of overdubs and layering parts that, you know, whether it's horns or strings or other kinds of sounds, basically parts that we don't really recreate live. And with John and Yellow, there was much more of a focus on the four of us playing in a room together and capturing the essence of what that sounds like.
Thanks again for listening to Northern Transmissions. I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Matthew from Cymbal Eats Guitars. We chatted a little bit about playing with the Flaming Lips and hanging out with Wayne Coyne.
Were you in the band when you did the shows with the Flaming Lips?
I was. Actually, the bass player who played on Why There Are Mountains and did the first national tour with the band when it opened for The Pains of Being Pure at Heart. He quit the band kind of unceremoniously, just before that tour. And so I auditioned to replace him. And it was just one of those serendipitous moments where, you know, I was unwittingly auditioning for a band of guys that ended up being, you know, three of my best friends and the people who I most enjoyed collaborating with musically. And yes, about 10 days after I joined the band, we were on stage in London opening for the Flaming Lips.
That must have been pretty exciting for you.
Yeah, I mean, I had played in front of big crowds before, just one-off things with other bands, just with other projects. But that was the first tour of any kind that I'd done. So the first time I was going on tour with a band was going to Europe for a month, and that included two shows with one of my favorite bands of all time, which was pretty crazy.
Did you get to meet with him, hang out a little bit with Wayne Coyne?
We did get to talk to him for a little bit. He's such a gentleman. After they had soundchecked, he actually I mean, I'm sure he noticed that we were sort of milling about awkwardly. And he actually, he approached us to have a little conversation, which was really nice. It meant a lot. We had played at the same festival as they had 2 or 3 days earlier in Germany. So we talked about that a little bit. But yeah, he's a really nice guy.
We went and left the dog on the highway media. Clarence got to my microbial forest
story behind that track, obviously, if you know who Gary Condit is. So let's listen to Matthew talk a bit about that one.
Yeah, it's funny. The song itself actually has it has nothing to do with the disgraced American politician. But it's a I guess it's a time and place signifier for Joe, just in terms of you know, the time in his life that he's writing about and the memories that he's pulling from. I guess that that pre 9/11 period is where the the memories that he's drawing from to write the song, I guess that's where they come from. I suppose we should also, since we're using his name as a song title, we should also point out when we're asked about it that that Gary Condit's name was never really properly cleared. But his career was over, but, you know, he didn't kill that girl. He was totally innocent.
He was never proven guilty, right, of anything?
No, I think they eventually found and prosecuted the guy who actually did it.
Oh, they did?
I think it was just like a random, unfortunate murder that just happened to be tied to this politician. I think it was somebody who had been prosecuted for another rape and murder who was actually already in prison or something like that. But anyway, I mean, and then 9/11 happened and all of a sudden it wasn't in the news anymore.
Thank you as always for tuning into the show. You can reach us if you have any comments or questions at northerntransmissions@gmail.com, or we are on MySpace or on Twitter, Northern Trans. Next, Matthew and I chatted a bit about participating in the Onion AV Undercover Project, as well as playing the Lollapalooza Festival.
The AV Club has a their Undercover series has a pretty cool twist to it, in that they start out the series with a list of 30 or however many songs, and then they reach out to bands. I'm not sure if they reach out to everybody at once or if they just sort of figure out who's going to be in town at a certain time in Chicago. But they basically reach out to bands with a list of songs. And if you're one of the first bands that they reach out to, lucky you, because you have about 30 songs to choose from.
Right.
But if you're one of the last bands, maybe you only have 2 songs to choose from.
Right.
And that was the case for us. And I think if I remember correctly, it came down to Detroit Has a Skyline or Driver 8 by R.E.M. And I think it just came down to which song we could sort of properly do justice to or try to, and which song that we were, you know, more immediately drawn to. So I guess that was the Super Chunk song.
Okay, so there were only a few songs left when you guys were going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was literally down to Detroit Has a Skyline or Driver 8, and we chose Detroit Has a Skyline. And I think the Walkmen ended up doing Driver 8.
Yeah, I did see that. I was going to ask you about that because you mentioned R.E.M. Yeah, R.E.M. and the Walkmen did, I guess the Walkmen were the last band to, on the list or whatever. They were the last ones to do the sessions. You guys beat them out.
I think so, yeah.
That's great. And
they must just do it based on who's going to be in town at a certain time, because I think we did that session, the day before Lollapalooza, I believe. And then we played Detroit Has a Skyline at the festival, and the guys from the AV Club were really psyched that we did the song that we covered for their session.
That's really great. And how was Lollapalooza? Were there how do you guys enjoy playing that?
It was great. It was one of the biggest stages and one of the biggest crowds we've ever had. We played a lot of new material. They got some really great responses from the crowd, which is pretty rare, especially for us when we bust out a new song live. It's usually sort of tough to get a handle on when you're hearing it for the first time. It was great. I'd love to go back and do it again. I think playing huge festival stages, it rattles us a little bit in terms of nerves, but it's always a blast, and it's always crazy to play, you know, sandwiched between two amazing bands on the same stage and in front of a huge crowd.
We talked a little bit about the amount of creative freedom that bands have now, as well as their access to their fans.
I generally think that the democratization of music on the internet is a good thing. I think that people can discover more music, and bands can more quickly and directly get music into the hands of their fans, which I think is great. We were really bummed out in late July because our record leaked. But, you know, and while we were bummed out about, like, the loss of control, or, you know, how could this person just decide that our record, you know, had to be out there, you know, after a couple days, we were seeing, like, wow, there's, you know, there's a lot of people saying really positive things about our record right now. And it's because of that leak. Because otherwise they wouldn't hear it for another 2 or 2.5 months.
That's right.
I do think it's kind of neat that you have sort of more direct contact with people. Just earlier today, I was going back and forth, you know, on our Facebook page. You can actually have a conversation with fans, like, on any given day. It's kind of cool.
That's great that you, talk to the fans. It's really, you know, not a lot of bands do that. It's really, it's interesting. And you enjoy that interaction?
Yeah, totally. I think even though it's, like, even though it's mostly via the internet, you know, obviously I think we prefer talking to fans in person at shows. I think it's nice for people to realize that they're, you know, that with this music that is so, like, widely available on the internet, occasionally for free, if that's how you want it, you know, that there are actual human beings on the other end who are creating it and putting it out there. I think people appreciate the connection.
Thanks very much for listening to Northern Transmissions. Thank you very much to the master of disaster, the man behind the boards who puts it all together, Andy Kallstrom. And thank you to Matthew from Symbols Eats Guitars for the interview. We're going to close out the show with the track Rifle Eyesight. And we're just going to let Matthew talk a bit more about the song is the lead-off track and how they decided to open up their record with an 8.5-minute song. So thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
I feel the head, I'm coming on an overpass. Rifle, I saw was lying low.